And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, it's 11:06 on a Sunday evening. And this is episode 82 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious, dimpled Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa? How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. We have Mike Estella, our executive producer, is here. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How's it going?
And Elif Garris is in the booth there, our producer. Hi, Elif. Welcome back from Vegas.
Hi. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Good to see you. And Elif is going to be celebrating a birthday next week.
She is. And we're looking at that deep, dark suntan she has.
I am as dark as can be.
Yes, you are. A very golden brown.
No sarcasm there.
And Lisa's heading off to Vegas tomorrow, too.
I am.
Gosh,
but
everybody has
but
fun around here, but me and
will
Mike.
We'll be back for next
Me and Mike,
weekend.
we just work and work and work.
Oh. That's all we do. But tonight's going to be an exciting night.
Yeah.
So.
That's right. And we are going to have a lot of fun tonight. We're going to start things off in a few minutes with Dragnet. Then it's Suspense and Pat Novak for Hire, because we have a salute to Jack Webb on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor, singer, songwriter's voice is featured in the animated adventure Trolls, and he serves as the film's executive music producer as well.
Right. I'm told I look a lot like this guy as well.
You are almost twins,
yeah,
I would have to say.
When he's walking away and I'm walking away, we look exactly alike.
And the winner will get a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He played Johnny in Trouble with the Curve.
The 3-2 pitch. This one's hit deep to center, way back, way back. This baby's got a chance. It's gone. Home run.
Yeah, this guy is quite the talented actor, singer.
Actor, singer, songwriter. I've got it all covered.
Very
here.
Talented guy. All right.
Yep.
Tell us who that is, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
You are listening to the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
The 3-2 pitch. This one's hit deep to center, way back, way back. This baby's got a chance. It's gone. Home run.
And we've got George on the line from Chicago. Hey, George.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. We're hoping that you could recognize that talented voice.
That would be the infamous Justin Timberlake.
You are right, and you are a winner. And what do you think, George? Carl and Justin, are they almost twins?
Yes. Yes, George, we are.
That's just unbelievable.
George knows how to do it. George, well, just because you said that and because you got the right answer, you are a winner. We are so happy to give you a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and be sure to check them out online at loumalnati's.com. Hey, George, thank you so much for calling in, and we do appreciate your listening to the WGN Radio Theater.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
Thank you very much. All right. Before we tune in to our first radio broadcast, which is Dragnet. Remember, Lisa? Dum, da-dum, dum. Dragnet. The story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
You need to drop about two octaves, but you're really close.
We have Dragnet coming up in a minute. But we have Dave Weiske, the VP of Customer Success from Cat's Pride, with us in the studio. What's up, Dave? How are you?
Doing well. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
You are pitch hitting for Dan Jaffe tonight.
That's right. He gets the day off.
He gets a day off. You know what? He deserves a day off once a year.
How come he
right?
gets a day off? How come I don't deserve the day off?
you're flying out to Vegas tomorrow.
Yeah. And you take off once a year, too.
Once a year.
So, Dave, we are very excited about having you guys as our sponsor. You're just an amazing sponsor for the program. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And we give away, or you guys give away, a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter every single month to one of our lucky listeners. But before we do the drawing and find our lucky winner, tell us a little bit about Cat's Pride.
Well, Cat's Pride is one of our most unique journeys in the litter campaign. I mean, we're talking about really a lightweight product in Cat's Pride Fresh and Light. The Ultimate Care is our latest offering, which is 50% lighter. And we talk about the carbon footprint that really heavy litter makes on the whole U.S. Highways and so forth. It is pretty incredible when we think about how many jugs of cat litter sit on a truck that go across the U.S. highways. And basically, we've eliminated almost 50% of those trucks going over the highway, which is pretty amazing.
Talk about a green, being a green product and conscious of the green. And that's what the Ultimate Care does. And also, speaking of green, it's in the green jug. That's how you
look
can find it.
Look for the green jug. Absolutely.
Right. Tell us about the campaign you're running right now about this product with Catherine Heigl.
Well, Catherine Heigl, it's been a huge deal. You know, we're also part of the Jason Dubas Heigl Foundation, which is a donation that we're donating for every jug that's sold. And that is a very important part of the campaign. And I think that is why Catherine aligned with us to go through this this effort. And it's pretty exciting to talk about helping companion animals. And that is what it's all about. So
right.
We're really excited.
Their whole goal is to thwart the needless suffering of dogs and cats across the country. And Cat's Pride and the Ultimate Care have joined her in this quest. And I think that's really great. A portion of every jug is donated to this cause. So when you switch to Ultimate Care as your kitty litter, not only are you helping the environment, but you're helping cats and dogs all across the country.
That's correct.
Yeah, very, very cool. So tell us a little bit about your job, Dave.
Well, I mean, my job, my history, I'm actually going on 30 years with
Wow.
Oil-Dri. Yeah,
Wow.
It's been a long time. And I feel like I've only been here 5. I mean, it's just so exciting. But with regard to my efforts in the past, it's been in the logistics supply chain, serving 77 countries globally over the whole globe, which has been pretty exciting. For my role now, shifting into the Vice President of Customer Success, it's about making sure our customers are being taken care of from a supply chain perspective, as well as just the whole performance of litter and so forth. So when we talk about getting challenges or having complaints, we work through our complaint desk and so forth, and I usually will get involved with regard to issues associated with that.
Very, very cool. And once again, the other great thing about Cat's Pride, this Ultimate Care, is, you know, these jugs are heavy, right? And you got somebody going to the store, maybe it's a Walmart or a Jewel or wherever to pick up this, and you're carrying it from the store to your car and then from your car to your home. But with Cat's Pride Ultimate Care, it's half the weight, yet it's still the same amount of uses. So this is, so not only is it easier on us carrying this jug, but it's obviously green for the
right.
environment.
And if you look at the jug, mm-hmm. you're on the shelf, you're looking at a 20-pound jug, and you're looking at us, and we're 10. We're volumetrically the same fill. So it's the same amount of fills for your litter pan, and more importantly, our attributes, which are odor control, 10 days of odor control, and great absorbency, and that is huge. And the lightweight impact is a big deal, especially for what you're talking about, taking
right.
it from the store, let's say in the metropolitan areas.
Yeah. So, folks, if you and there's a lot of people listening that have cats, you should definitely try this product. We think you'll absolutely love it. It's Cat's Pride Ultimate Care. It's in the green jug. You can get it pretty much everywhere, right?
That's correct.
All right. Very cool. All right. So Dave is going to draw a name out of a hat. Is it virtually a hat? It's more of a bag.
No, it's really a bag. It's my headphone bag.
It's a huge bag.
All right, so
yes.
People have sent in pictures of their kitty cats to enter the contest, and Dave is going to do that. Now, do we have a drum roll? We do. Let's do that.
Okay, we've got a winner, and it is Susan it's Susan Moken from Milford, Connecticut, and her cat, Rusty.
Rusty, all right.
Here comes Rusty.
Here comes Rusty, and she is going to get a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, right, Lisa?
Yeah, I didn't know you were going to ever stop talking. I'm sorry. I'm looking at him. Like, my mouth keeps opening, but I have no chance.
I didn't even know you were here, Lisa.
Yeah, what can
we
I say?
We thought Lisa took a break.
Yeah. Took a little nap.
She went to Vegas early.
Yeah. No, we're so thrilled to give this product away. We believe in your company and we believe in your cat litter. And so that's why we feel honored to partner with you as well.
Thanks. Thanks for letting me pinch hit. I appreciate it.
Yep. Way to go. And Dan, take a night off once in a while, would you?
He's listening in, and so are the whole family.
All right. Dan Jaffe, thank you very much for supporting our program. Our listeners really appreciate it as well. Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Dave. Great seeing you.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, it's time for our first classic radio show, Dragnet. It was a police procedural. It was on the air from 1949 all the way to 1957, 9 seasons on the radio. These were true crime stories of closed cases. Jack Webb played L.A. Police Detective Sergeant Joe Friday. Each case was detailed from start to finish, and Friday narrated the action on this show. You know, Lisa, most radio shows, drama shows, had like 1 or 2 sound effects men. Well, Dragnet needed 5 sound effects engineers because there were so many sound effects. And Jack Webb was really a stickler. He liked things to sound super real. I mean, when you listen to Dragnet, it sounds a little different than other detective shows, and I think you'll enjoy it. This, of course, moved to television as well, 16 seasons on TV, and it was also made into a couple of movies. Let's tune this in. December 29th, 1949. This is called The Flowerland Roof Murder, starring Jack Webb as Sergeant Joe Friday. Here's part one of Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, for a more authentic presentation, portions of the program you are about to hear were actually recorded on the scene. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent. Dragnet. Detective Sergeant. You're assigned to robbery detail. A gang of holdup men have been running loose in your city. They've committed more than 12 robberies. They're heavily armed, quick to shoot. Your job, stop them. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Saturday, July 21st. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the night watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the record bureau, and it was 6:55 p.m. when I got to room 27A. Robbery detail.
Hi, Joe. You ready?
Let's go.
Where till I dump this top coat? There. It's too hot out tonight for that.
Yeah. The rest of the guys take off already?
Yeah, we better hustle.
How many men are working this thing tonight?
Must be at least 50, covering every drugstore in the South Central area.
Mm-hmm. Which one did we draw?
Naomi and South Alameda, Rex Pharmacy.
Yeah?
Parking lot across the street. We can cover the pharmacy from there.
Well, we better check out a Thompson from the business office first, huh?
It's a good idea. We might as well be ready. They are.
Who got the tip the gang was moving into the south end of town?
Johnny Powers, one of his informants.
Okay, here we are.
Business office, Blair. Yeah, I'll take care of it. Thanks.
Hey, Blair, do you want to check out a Thompson for us?
Okay, Friday. Heavy duty?
Yeah, kind of.
There's a sign-out book.
Thank you.
Hey, you might as well give us a shotgun while you're at it, Blair.
Okay. Check these out for an hour. Sounds like a busy night for you fellas.
Yeah, maybe.
Thompson's okay. So's the shotgun.
Want to sign up for the shotgun too, Joe?
Yeah. Okay. One Thompson submachine gun, one shotgun. You got those serial numbers there, Blair?
Yeah. Thompson 67811.
67811. Yeah.
Shotgun 655228.
55228. Okay. Signed, Joe Friday, serial number 2288. Ben Romero. What's your serial number, Ben?
2633.
Oh, yeah. 633.
Six okay. Shells for the shotgun, 50 shells for the Thompson, okay?
All right, I'll sign for him. Okay.
Gang's pretty rough, I understand. Gun heavy.
Yeah, that's what they tell us. Okay, here's the book, all signed.
Okay, here you go. A lot of firepower there.
Yeah, hope you don't have to clean them when we bring them back. We went down to the basement of the city hall, picked up our car, 80K, and drove out to Naomi and South Alameda Streets. We located the parking lot and pulled in. There were four other cars parked in the lot, so we wouldn't be conspicuous. Ben and I got in the back seat out of the light. From our vantage point, we had a clear view of the entrance to the Rex Pharmacy across the street. We had the shotgun and the submachine gun on the seat beside us. We listened to the calls coming in the radio, and we waited.
Interference. 13,
stand by. There's no cooler here than this in the office.
Yeah.
Hot and sticky, huh?
Yeah. Paper says it's going to be worse tomorrow.
Roll down your window, will you, and get some air in here?
Yeah, huh?
The pharmacy isn't doing much business. Not more than a dozen people in there in the last hour.
No soda fountain again. Sure is hot.
You have to talk about it, huh?
It helps.
What time you got?
10 minutes to 10.
Want a smoke?
No, thanks.
Yeah, I'll get it. That gang's gonna show up here. Wish they'd get it over with.
Bowers might have got a bum tip.
Well, the gang hasn't missed a weekend for 2 months.
I wonder how much time the average cop spends waiting.
I don't know. Put it all together and make a fine vacation. What do we do? Sit this out till the pharmacy closes?
Yeah, 2 a.m. Sure is hot.
Yeah. Midnight came and passed. The traffic on South Alameda thinned out. Only an occasional customer entered the pharmacy across the street. Ben kept complaining about the heat. We waited.
Well, that's it, Joe. Air, go to the lights. Drugstore's closing.
Yeah, the guy's locking the doors. There he goes.
We might as well shove off, too.
Yeah. Let's get in the front seat.
There's not much call for this shotgun tonight.
Well, there's no use checking it in. Same duty tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
Attention, all units. All units in the vicinity of 8th and Hill, on the corner of Hill and Geneva Alley, the 211 and shooting, code 3.
Hit the light.
Yeah, come on, let's roll. Sunday, July 22nd, 2:15 a.m. Ben and I pulled up at the Merchant Security Trust Company on the corner of South Hill and Geneva Alley. Two patrol cars were already on the scene, and four uniformed officers were trying to keep back a crowd of people who had gathered at the top of a flight of marble stairs, which led off the street, down one flight to the bank's night depository. At the bottom of the stairs, an elderly man was sprawled out, face down, his right arm twisted under him. The man was dead. Ben counted 5 bullet wounds in the victim's back. We interviewed the only witness, a young sailor.
My name's Vasey, Sergeant. Don Vasey, quartermaster, second class. Here's my ID card.
You saw the shooting, Vasey?
I was about a half a block away. I just came out of the bar down the street there, the Top Hat.
Yeah?
Had a couple of beers, and I left, and I started walking back to the hotel.
When was that?
About 2:05.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Well, before I got to the corner, I saw this man ahead of me. He crossed the street and headed over for the bank. Then this car pulled up, and some guys got out. They ran over to the man, and it looked like they were frisking him.
Yeah?
All of a sudden, I heard shots. The man ran for the stairs here, and then it looked like he stumbled and fell. A bunch of guys jumped back in the car and drove away.
What'd you do then?
Well, I ran up to see what I could do for the old man. He was lying down there where he is now. Nothing I could do for him. I yelled for a cop.
Did you get a look at the men in that car?
No, I just saw him from a distance. 4 of them, maybe 5.
What about the car? Did you see the license number?
The last couple of numbers, that's all. 699. Couldn't see the rest.
Mm-hmm. What was it, a coupe or sedan?
A sedan, maroon color. It was a Pontiac, either a 1940 or 41.
You sure about that?
I used to own one back in Delaware, 1940 model. I sold it to my brother when I went in the Navy. I'm sure all right.
And you're sure about the number of men in the car?
Oh, yes, sir. 4 or 5, no more.
I see, thanks. Well, will you drive back to the office with us and give us a full statement?
Sure, Sergeant. Anything you say.
You can wait in the car, Vasey. We won't be long.
Sure.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I don't know.
Drugstore gang?
Said there were four guys. Could be. No description.
Maroon car. Three numbers off the license plate.
Pretty thin.
Yeah. Looks like a hard summer.
All right, let's take a break here on Dragnet. Going back to 1949, starring Jack Webb, we have a salute to Jack Webb on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a break, then it's more. Lisa, you ready to talk yet or what? I mean, you're just not very talky.
You are a chatty catty tonight. Nobody can get a word in edgewise.
Pull my string.
I'm always pulling your string.
It is 11:36 and... happy Sunday, the day before Memorial Day here. Lisa's off to Vegas tomorrow. Thanks a lot for inviting me, Lisa.
Well, at least I'll be back for next weekend. I wouldn't leave you here alone.
Yeah, don't do that.
I wouldn't do that to you. I've done it before and it wasn't fun.
No, it's no fun without you here, Lisa. It's no one to make jokes with and goof around with. So.
Yeah.
We appreciate you, Lisa. Have fun out there in Vegas.
I will.
Don't give too much money to the... where are you staying?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Well, have fun.
Thanks.
Yeah, don't lose too much money.
I'm going to stay in my camper that's parked on the side behind the strip.
Very good. All right. So we are listening to Dragnet. We have a long piece to finish this. So let's get right back to this December 29th, 1949 episode of Dragnet.
We completed our preliminary investigation. The coroner arrived, and the body was taken to the county morgue in the basement of the Hall of Justice. The victim was identified as Walter Conroy, the proprietor of the Flowerland Dance Hall on South Hill Street. Together with officers Fremont and Hurst from Homicide, Ben and I spent most of Sunday tracking down employees of the dance hall and interviewing them. We sent a rush teletype to the Department of Motor Vehicles in Sacramento containing the partial license number, plus our scanned information on the car which the suspects drove. Early Monday afternoon, Ben and I, along with Captain Ed Walker of Robbery Detail, met with Chief of Detectives Thad Brown.
What kind of a motive are you working on?
Robbery. Our dance hall manager, Conroy, was on his way to the bank's night depository when this bunch caught up with him. He had the night's receipts with him from the dance hall.
How much did they get, Walker?
$350. They missed over $1,000 Conroy had in an inside pocket.
No idea who pulled the stick up?
Could have been that drugstore gang.
Why them?
We haven't missed working a weekend night for 2 months. There's no sign of any other job that they might have pulled Saturday.
Just a hunch, Chief. Nothing to go on. We'll have to guess our way for a while.
Sacramento checking the description of the car, the numbers off the license plate?
Yeah, ought to have an answer this afternoon.
Any leads on the drugstore gang at all?
Plenty. None of them good. Suspects are loaded down with guns. That's all we know.
Excuse me. Brown speaking. Just a minute. Friday's for you.
Okay, thanks. Reached over here. Friday. Yeah, Ralph. How many? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Well, I got an answer from DMV Sacramento about the holdup car.
What'd they say, Joe?
Well, they looked up the possible combinations of 1940 or 41 Pontiac sedans with the numbers 699 in the license plate.
Yeah?
123 possibles to check.
Not much choice.
No car that description on the hot list. Killer might be the legal owners.
123.
Well, even after we check them, we still might not have the right party.
That's right. If we got a better lead, we'll work on it.
Nope.
Well, then ride this till it falls apart.
For the next 13 days, Ben and I, Fremont and Hurst from Homicide, plus a half a dozen other men, hacked away at the list of 123 car registrations, any one of which could have been issued to the holdup car. The color of the sedan didn't help us much to start with, since California vehicle registrations do not include the colors of the cars. After 14 days of gradual elimination of possibles, the field was narrowed to 6, then 4, and then 2. August 6th, Monday, 5:30 p.m., Ben and I were called to Thad Brown's office.
Gentlemen, you check out that last possible yet?
About 20 minutes ago. It didn't pan out.
What about Hurst and Fremont? They had one left.
Right here. Could be the answer.
Yeah.
1940 Pontiac sedan, license number 4XA699. Last registration, San Diego.
Sounds good.
We teletyped the San Diego police. They say the car's been sold to a woman out in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm. Anyone checked her?
Well, that's what I want you two for.
San Diego and Santa Monica.
Well, it's in the right area.
Can't afford to miss now. I hope it's the right one.
Well, it's got to be. Check it.
Ben and I checked the woman in Santa Monica, Mrs. Fielding. She told us that she had sold the car 6 months before to a friend who lived in Bakersfield. We contacted her friend. He told us the car had been traded in by him to an auto dealer in Pasadena. We checked the dealer. He said the car had been sold off his used car lot 2 months before. The new buyer had given his name as Emil Thurston. Two names were given as reference, Lloyd Newton and John Lacombe. We ran a routine check through the record bureau.
Ran them through, fellas. Here's the packages.
Get a make for him?
On all three.
What'd you find on Thurston?
Let's see. Thurston, two-time loser, second time up to Q on 5 counts of armed robbery. On parole from Quentin now.
How about the other two?
Well, Lacombe, let's see. Preston Reformatory, 2 terms, went up 3 years ago, violation of Dyer Act. He's on parole, too.
What about Newton? Did you make him?
2 terms in Oklahoma. They're looking for him now at jump parole.
Can I look at that just a minute, Frank?
Well, sure.
So I have all three of them here. Take a look, Ben. Each one of the mama sheets on these three guys.
Yeah, I look.
Right here under General M.O., see?
Mm-hmm. Thurston, heavily armed at time of arrest.
Yeah. This one, Lacombe, right?
Heavily armed.
This one on Newton? Same thing.
Gun happy.
Yeah. Come on. At the time he purchased the car, suspect Emil Thurston listed his home address as 1517 North Hoover Avenue. Previous robbery victims positively identified Thurston and his companions. At 1517 North Hoover, the landlady also identified Thurston and his companions as tenants. She told us they drove a red sedan and they parked the car at a Temple Street garage. An immediate stakeout was placed on the apartment house, and we started a canvas of Temple Street garages from Hoover Avenue down to Rampart Boulevard. At 4 p.m., Ben spotted the car in Donnelly's garage on Temple Street near Michigan Drive. The garage attendant told us that the owner of the car had given his name as Emil Thurston. We showed him the mug shots.
Yeah, used to park his car in here a while back. Then he came in yesterday morning with these two guys and said he wanted a paint job. Hmm.
Doesn't look like he needs a paint job to me.
They offered me $20 extra if I do it in a hurry. He wants the car painted green.
When's he going to call for the car?
About 10 o'clock tonight. These jobs take time. He's not going to like it if the car's not finished.
He won't like it if it is. Come on, Ben. p.m. Tuesday, August 7th. Chief of Detectives Thad Brown and Captain Ed Walker swung the entire robbery detail into action. The stakeout at the apartment house on North Hoover continued. An additional detail of men was stationed in a vacant store on Temple Street directly opposite Donnelly's garage. Donnelly's garage was a small family outfit, and the only spot from which we could cover it thoroughly without being seen was from a large paint locker set up against the right wall. The garage man cleared enough room so that Ben and I could fit into the locker in a half-stoop position. 2 small latches were rigged up so that we could pull the doors closed from the inside. 4 ventilation holes at the top and bottom of the doors provided us with peepholes. At 8 o'clock that night, Ben and I took our places inside the locker. The trap was set. We waited.
Yeah. Can you see all right, Joe?
Yeah. Oh, it's hot in here. Mm. Stale air.
It's a tight fit. I'm getting a cramp in my shoulder.
Yeah. What time did that garage man say he closed?
11 o'clock. Oh, those lousy paint smells.
Stuffy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, that car pulling in. Can you see the driver?
Wait a minute. It's nothing. Somebody getting gas.
Mm. Hope they show up. Wouldn't want this to go on another night.
Well, don't count on it.
Foot's going to sleep.
Why don't you stand still? What time you got?
Let me see. Get the light on in here. 9:10.
Thanks. The popular conception of the working detective rarely includes a glimpse of his everyday run-of-the-mill duties. Filling out forms, conducting interviews, or waiting long, monotonous hours parked in a car or standing half-crouched in a garage paint locker. It's slow, dull, and tedious, and it's 95% of the police officer's job.
By 10 o'clock that night, there was still no sign of Thurston and his friends. The cramped locker got more cramped with the passing minutes. The air was thick with paint fumes. We waited. At 10:55, a taxi pulled to a stop in front of the garage. Three men got out.
You see him, Joe?
Wait till they step into the light.
Yeah.
There's another guy still in the cab.
Here they come. There's the first guy.
Yeah, it's Thurston.
Fourth guy's getting out of the cab.
That looks like Newton, doesn't it?
That's him.
Yeah, it's Lacombe right behind. Fat guy. Here they come.
They sure do look the part.
All right. Unlatch your door, but don't open it.
Yeah.
Quiet, Ben. What's the matter?
That match is stuck. Wait a minute.
Did you get it?
No, it's really stuck.
All right, tap it with your gun stock.
Yeah,
come on, easy.
There. There it is. It's loose.
Good. Can you see where they are now?
Yeah. Talking to the garage man. Not looking this way.
No, they just stay that way, huh? You ready?
Okay.
Don't tip them off till we're right on top of them. Let them get away from that garage man, huh?
Right.
All right. Let's go. Approximately 25 or 30 yards separated us from the suspects. I glanced across Temple Street at the vacant store where Thad Brown and the other men were staked out. 25 yards is a long way to walk when you're approaching a murderer, and you know that he won't hesitate to kill you in order to escape. Ben flipped the safety off the machine gun. We were almost halfway across the garage, 15 yards away. Thurston turned and saw us.
Look out, Joe!
Stop them!
They ducked behind the car, went up the stairs. Three of them. Come on.
Friday, where'd they go?
Up the stairs.
Bumper, after them, circle the building. Hurry.
Up this way, Joe.
Yeah, watch it, Ben. Get on.
They're somewhere back in that corner up there.
You're trapped. Throw down your gun. All right, Ben, give it over.
Throw down your guns. Throw them down.
There's three of them.
Six of them. All right, now come on down with your hands behind your head.
Cover me, Ben. I'll frisk them.
Right. You up on the end. Get your hands in the back of your head.
All right, stand still. All right, next one. Go on. Clean. All right. Lacombe.
Watch him, John. All right, you. Rest of you, stand back. Keep your hands up.
You all right, Joe?
Yeah. Two more guns on him.
All right, you two, hold it. Here comes Chief.
Yeah,
I'll get these guns together here. Lacombe, he's not much of a fighter.
Not without a gun. The suspects were booked at different divisions to keep them separated. Emil Thurston and Lloyd Newton were taken to Hollenbeck Park and booked on suspicion of armed robbery and murder. John Lacombe was booked at Highland Park Jail on the same charges. The other suspect, who had been wounded in the escape attempt, was identified as Harold Steves, 19 years old. He was treated for a leg wound at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital and then transferred to the prison ward at the county hospital. During the next 2 days, each of the suspects was questioned individually. Thurston, Lacombe, and Newton would admit nothing. The 19-year-old Steves broke down and agreed to turn state's evidence. We took his statement to Chief of Detectives Thad Brown.
Gentlemen, what did the boy tell you?
Just about everything, boss. They pulled the drugstore holdups and they killed that dance hall owner, Walter Conroy.
Which one of them?
Well, the kid says Thurston shot him. He says Thurston's the gang leader.
Good. You finally got a count on those guns you took off them?
Yeah, 12 of them. Each one of them was ready to go, bullet in every chamber.
Did you get a complaint from the DA's office yet?
They were arraigned. Preliminary hearing set for Monday.
Fine. You got them in jail, now put them in prison.
The apprehension of the criminal doesn't mean the end of a case for a police officer. He spends just as much time helping to convict the criminal after he's caught. Evidence must be gathered and authenticated and presented to the district attorney's office. If confessions are possible, they must be obtained and put in order. The officer must also help out in formulating the case and in testifying at the trial of the suspect. On October 30th, almost 3 months after the Thurston gang was apprehended, they were brought to trial in Superior Court. It was a routine affair. Harold Steves took the stand and told the story of the gang's activities. The victims identified the suspects and testified to the robberies. Both Ben and I took the stand and testified to the arrest and possession of guns by the defendants. We received no cross-examination. On the morning of March 2nd, the case went to the jury. Ben and I had lunch with Lieutenant Rombo from robbery in the City Hall cafeteria, and it was 1:05 when we got back to the office.
Well, it sure was good soup today.
Yeah, it was a nice lunch. You want to check the mail?
I didn't yet.
Oh, I'll get it. Robbery Friday. Yeah? When? Right. Lacombe and Thurston. They just broke jail.
Within 7 minutes, a dragnet for the escaped criminals had been thrown around the entire city. Chief of Detectives Thad Brown directed the operation. At 14 minutes past one, he called us to the photocopy room. The machines were turning out duplicate mugshots of Thurston and Lacombe for distribution at the rate of one every 4 seconds.
You want us to stand by, Chief?
For the moment, yeah. We got all the help we need on the street.
How'd they pull the break, anyway?
Slugged the deputy when he brought in their lunch. Used a steel leg from one of the benches in the prisoner's tank.
Yeah?
And they beat the deputy right into the ground, but he held on to Newton. He didn't get away.
Well, how'd Thurston and Lacombe ever get out of the building?
He's a real freak. They slugged the elevator man and got down to the basement.
Uh-huh.
Right then, an ambulance crew was wheeling a body into the morgue. The attendant left the ignition keys in the ambulance.
Shouldn't be too rough to track them if they're in an ambulance.
Tougher than you think.
How are those copies coming, Frank? Fast as we can make them, Chief. Have another batch for you in a minute.
You had any reports at all yet, boss?
Couple. They're moving fast.
Frank, you want to get that? I can't see in this dark room.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Yeah? Chief Brown in there?
Yeah, Ed, come on in.
Now, Walker, what do you got?
Kill that dryer, will you?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what do you got?
Gas station out on Sunset. Lacombe and Thurston just held it up.
We picked up our car in the City Hall garage and drove out to the service station on the corner of Sunset Boulevard and Lorraine Drive. Detectives Ruiz and Stromwall from robbery were already on the scene. The two escapees had abandoned the ambulance there, robbed the station of $56 in currency, and stolen a 1938 gray Packard coupe, license number 7 Robert 6336. We left the station and started to cruise the area. It was 1:55 p.m.
Attention all units, attention all units.
Get it up,
Joe. 6380 North Sunset, a 211 in progress. 6380 North Sunset, a 211 in progress. Code 3.
This is a 6100, bro.
Yeah, come on.
At 6380 North Sunset.
Yes, look.
Maybe. Push it. Hey, that car pulling out up ahead there.
A gray coupe.
Wait a minute. 7 Robert, that's them.
Lights changing. They can't make it.
They're going through. They're skidding.
They hit the lamppost. Broke it off.
All right, pull up. Come on.
Right.
All right, let's go.
Lucky if they live through this one.
Yeah. All right, come on. Help me with this door.
Yeah, all right.
Pull.
All right.
All right, can you take him?
Yeah.
I'll get Lacombe.
You look okay?
Please,
yep. Get Thurston out of here.
All right. Come on, you. Come on.
Yeah. All right, Lacombe, come on.
Then come to me, I'm gonna kill you.
Oh, sure you will. Come on.
I'll kill you.
All right, don't try to walk. How's Thurston, Ben?
Seems okay. Couple of scratches.
All right, sit down over there.
Lacombe slugged the guard.
It's funny. They don't look very tough.
They can't play their part. They haven't got their guns. Just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On March 3rd, 1947, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 91, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. Emil Thurston, John Lacombe, and Lloyd Newton were convicted of first-degree murder and robbery and sentenced to life terms. For turning state's evidence, 19-year-old Harold Steeves received special consideration. As a result of the jailbreak, Thurston and Lacombe were convicted of assault and escape. They are now serving life terms in the state penitentiary. You have just heard Dragnet, a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Acting Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department. Dragnet honors the city of Pasadena, State of California, and the men who make up the Pasadena Police Force, another of America's great law enforcement agencies. One of these men, Chief of Police Clarence H. Morris, traffic specialist and veteran police administrator, dedicates his life to making yours more secure.
Dragnet, portion transcribed from Los Angeles.
Be sure to hear songs by Morton Downey tonight
on NBC.
All right, that's Dragnet from an original broadcast date of December 29, 1949. The Flowerland Roof Murder, starring Jack Webb, also in the cast Barton Yarborough. That was originally sponsored by Fatima Cigarettes, but we removed all of the cigarette commercials because we don't want you to smoke. It's heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed that. We are in the midst of a salute to Jack Webb. A little later, we're going to tune into Suspense, starring Jack Webb. Then it's Pat Novak for Hire from 1946, also starring Jack Webb. All of this is brought to you by Cat's Pride and our other sponsors, including Mies Meals. And we're going to talk to the president of Mies Meals in just a few minutes. But first, these words. All righty, hour two of the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 82 in the series, right, Lisa?
82. Isn't that amazing?
Wow, very, very cool. All right, we're in the midst of tuning in to a salute to Jack Webb. We will listen to a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense in this hour. And then in our third hour, it's Pat Novak for Hire. Happy Memorial Day.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day.
As one of our texters just said, have a reflective Memorial Day,
yes.
Which I thought was really nice.
Very, very cool. All right, all of this fun stuff is brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
In the comedy Why Him, this actor plays an overprotective dad who visits his daughter at Stanford and meets her billionaire boyfriend.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200 if you want to win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. And here's a hint. This actor was the star of TV's Breaking Bad.
Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it.
All right, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. We'll find our winner after this break.
Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Do you know how much I make a year? I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it.
Hey, Tommy.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm doing just fine. Hi.
Great. You recognize that very talented voice?
That is Brian Cranston.
Yes, that is. And you are a winner. I'm a big fan of Bryan Cranston. Just thought that was important to let you know. And you are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. I hope you enjoy that. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com and have a delicious pizza on us.
Thank you so much. Love your show.
Oh, thank you so much, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy. All right. Before we get into Suspense, I want to introduce or bring back to our radio microphones the CEO of Mies Meals, Scott Zuckerman. And Scott, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Carl. Glad to be here again.
It's great to see you again. And let's just spend a few minutes talking about this incredible special that we have going on for our listeners and some of the menu items at Mies Meals. But first, tell us a little bit about Mies Meals, just in case anyone listening hasn't heard that yet.
So Mies is a delivery of meal kits that you prepare for dinner at home to get from-scratch meals. They're very healthy, taste great, and usually you can get them on the table from beginning to end in about 30 minutes.
Yeah. So I think we're just in time for summer here. Some of us are going to Las Vegas. Some of us just want to tone up our bodies. Why is Mies Meals a good offer for a delicious but healthy alternative?
So obviously you can choose things that are really not enjoyable, like not eating or going on some kind of diet that's
like a fad of some
sort.
Yeah,
that's making you drink a protein shake or something like that. Or you could actually have delicious from scratch meals that you can choose what you put in them and what you want to include and not. This week, for example, one of the items is the crispy wonton cups. So it's these little tartlet cups that you bake in the oven, and they have kale and edamame and coconut and then our incredible peanut sauce on top of it. And so per serving, per person, that's under 600 calories. So it tastes great. You feel like you're eating a really hearty, filling meal, but, it's not a lot of calories.
What I love about Mies Meals is I don't have to order every week. I can order when I want to order if I'm in town. If I'm going out of town, it's not like I have to then call you and say, oh, don't send me food. This is something that you order whenever you want to order, which is really interesting.
Yeah, we're trying to do everything we can to make it as flexible and easy for our customers. So they're not locked into two servings or three servings or two meals a week or four meals a week. It's whatever you want, as many servings or as few, and there's a rotating menu so you can look for the items that you like for that week or that your family wants to eat that week and order them.
Right, and when you get it, it's great. They come in this, in sort of like a square.
It's a cooler.
It's a square cooler. But no,
with a nice pack.
Yeah, but what's great about it is when I open it up and I make it, right, it has these cue cards in it for me because I'm not the world's best chef, that's for sure. But guess what? They taste delicious because it's so easy to cook a Mies meal.
Scott, I have to tell you that I've been trying Mies meals since we started working with you on the show. And so we've had a lot of options of food. And I'm a picky eater, that's for certain. And I like the flexibility of knowing that I can choose the ingredients I want to put in and not the ones I don't want to put in. For example, I'm not a fan of coconut. I'm happy to make that and just skip the coconut. I also know that the chicken is very fresh. My kids love the steak. It's tender. The salmon was absolutely delicious and fresh. So we really do appreciate that it's clearly the funnest and freshest ingredients. And I'm not just saying that. I eat them myself. And I'm hoping that if you're at all interested in hearing more about it, you can check our Facebook page. Each week I post pictures of the food as it comes delivered from Mies Meals before I cook it and after I cook it. So I really do appreciate working with you and having your delicious and healthy meals each week.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate it.
And here's the best. Here is the absolute best part of it all, right? We talk about Mies Meals all the time, and we just love it. But you graciously are offering all of our listeners all across Illinois, there are certain parts that you don't deliver to, okay? So we mostly in the Chicago area, in the suburbs and things, there are some parts of, like, you don't go outside the Illinois border, okay?
We do to Northwest Indiana.
Okay, so. Northwest Indiana. But it's still a very large area that you deliver to, okay? And here's the thing. You can try, folks. You can try Mies Meals absolutely free. I mean, there's no gimmicks here. This is absolutely free. You get a dinner for two delivered to your home. There's absolutely no cost as long as you put the promo code in of radio. So go to Mies Meals. It's M-E-E-Z Meals, MiesMeals.com. That's M-E-E-Z Meals.com. And check out the menu. Check out this great company that we endorse, that we all use. Mike does. I do. Lisa does. And I think you'll just absolutely love it. Just try it one time. It's absolutely free.
But make sure to put in promo code radio, and you can have a free dinner for two delivered to your home. And we want you to try it, and we'd love to hear from you. We love to get your feedback. We want to know what you thought of the meals. Scott wants to hear. I want to hear. We are so sure that you'll like it that we'd love to hear from you.
Yep.
There's a lot of variety, which is what I like, because there's always something that my wife likes and what I like, so we never fight about what we're going to order on
Mies
Meals.
Well, you fight, but just not about dinner.
This.
And keeping couples together.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We all order out, you know, every week. I mean, people order out. You know, here's a healthy way to have food brought in. You can skip the pizza or skip the burgers, get some healthy food from Mies Meals, but don't take our word for it. Try it for yourself. It's absolutely free. Go to Mies, M-E-E-Z, Meals.com and look at the menu and order your dinner for two delivered to your home absolutely free. All right, Scott, great seeing you.
Thank you very much.
All right,
thanks,
we appreciate
Scott.
Mies Meals very much. Time now for Jack Webb on Suspense. This is from July 24th, 1947. It's called Murder by an Expert. Let's tune into part one now of Suspense.
Suspense. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Suspense. Presented by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A. Roma Wines for your everyday enjoyment. Tonight, Roma Wines of Fresno, California bring you Miss Lynn Barry in Murder by an Expert. A suspense play produced, edited, and directed for Schenley by William Spear.
I didn't want to hurt him. I didn't want to hurt him, but I couldn't do it while he lay there sleeping so peacefully. He had to be awake when it happened. He had to be awake. Bob? Bob?
Hmm?
Bob, get up. Get up.
What's the matter? I haven't...
We have an audition.
What time is it?
20 minutes to 11.
An audition in the middle of the night?
There's a club over on 8th Street, needs a dance team. Tabor just phoned me, said to get over there right away.
I didn't hear any phone.
You were asleep.
It usually wakes me. All right, I'll get dressed. Suppose they want us to go on tonight. I'm not going to be much good. I think it could wait till morning. Anyway.
That was step number one. While he was dressing, I stepped out to the payphone in the hall. I could hear him in the bathroom. I looked at the watch. I didn't have to rush. I had time, enough time.
Yes?
Hello, Jimmy?
Was that you, Edith?
Yes. Jimmy, we're battling again. I think this time it's the end. He's going to leave me.
No, that's silly. Is he there now?
Yes.
Well, put him on. I'll talk to him.
Oh, he's in the bathroom. He wouldn't come to the phone for me anyway. Perhaps it's best we split up. I don't know.
No. Well, you're the best thing that ever happened to that kid brother of mine, and I won't let him do anything he'll be sorry for. Suppose I drop up there now and see him.
I don't know, Jimmy.
I'll be right over, kid. You just sit tight. Leave it to me. I've been managing that spoiled little brat for years. I'll be right up there.
Yes, Jimmy. Step number two. The big brother was going to step over and straighten everything out. I looked at the watch again. It was 10:45. He'd get there at 11. Just the time. Just the right time.
All right. Are we going or aren't we?
Oh, you got ready quickly.
Who was that on the phone?
Wrong number.
Yeah? Did you tell a wrong number? You couldn't go out with them tonight?
I said it was a wrong number.
Yeah, I heard you.
You don't believe me?
You're going to get ready to go out or aren't you?
I didn't like to have it that way, but that was how it had to be. Violent, angry. Like there'd been an argument. That was how it was going to have to look. He turned his back to me and started lifting our costumes into a little suitcase. I slid the knife into my hand. Cold, cold. Even the wood handle was cold. What would the steel feel like to Bob? I came very close to him. He started to turn.
Where's your other tab?
And I jumped forward quickly and lost the knife somewhere in his throat. I hadn't meant to let the knife slip out of my hand that way. I stood quietly until he stopped writhing. Then I reached down and lifted the knife up and wiped the handle off. I had to do that. Then I dropped it again. For a moment, I watched the blood soaking across the rug. I couldn't take my eyes off it. I was fascinated by it. Then I snapped awake. I looked around the room. I don't know what for. I'd taken care of everything, but I looked anyway. And then I saw it. The little pocket watch that George had loaned me for the timing, because everything had to be timed right, just right. I must have put it down there when I did it. I slipped it into my handbag, put on my hat and coat. It was 10:50. That was when he died. 10:50. It was 10:50 when I slipped out of the apartment. The timing had to be right, just right. That was when I'd killed him. 10:50. I had to get away quickly now. It had to be the back stairs. I went down them as quickly as I could, my heart beating wildly. If anyone saw me, it was the end. I'd die in the chair for what I'd...
Please, perhaps we'll go down, Dinky. There's the elevator. Hi, Dinky. Hi, Dinky. Hi, Dinky. Hi, Dinky. Oh, Pinky wants to go down the stairs.
Oh, no.
Yes, Pinky? Oh, the elevator. Very well, Pinky, the elevator it will be. Pinky should have said so the first time. Come along, Pinky.
I was trembling violently when I hit the street. Nobody had seen me. Nobody had seen me. I lost myself in the Broadway crowds. But all of a sudden, I didn't want lights. I wanted quiet and shadows. I cut across to park. I passed the apartment house once. There was no one around. I came back and dove down the stairway marked service entrance. I walked through the cellar.
Shh, shh, Edith, here, over here.
Oh, George.
Did anyone see you come in?
No one. I'm sure no one did. Oh,
shh.
George.
Come on, up the stairs here. I thought we might use a service elevator, but it's too risky. It's only one flight up. Steady now. Current is clear. Come on. There, it's all over. It's all over, dear.
Oh, George, hold me. I'm shivering so.
Well, it's all over, dear. It's all over now.
There were no more things to do now. No more steps to take cautiously, carefully. I was on the top of the ladder now, and I could reach out and pluck the stars right out of the sky. I had to stay up there. I had to stay up there. I wasn't nervous at all, Bob. You'd have thought I'd been doing that sort of thing all my life.
Oh, you're wonderful, Edith.
All I remember is the blood on the carpet. It'll have to be cleaned, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We will be happy now, won't we, George?
Oh, that will be the police.
Oh, I'd forgotten. I was thinking it was all over.
It's just this little more. Do you feel up to it?
Oh, I'm all right, dear. I'll be fine. You'll see. I won't throw it all away now. Open the door.
Ms. Reed?
Yes?
We're from the police department, Ms. Reed.
The police department? What?
Well, Ms. Reed, your husband's had an accident.
Bob? Tell me. Tell me.
He's been stabbed, ma'am. He's dead.
Bob? But...
We'd like to have you come down to headquarters to identify him. And...
Bob? Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. I cried then. It was sort of a release. I was tired and lost all of a sudden, and I cried real tears. I knew they would be impressed. I was crying because I was tired, and they would think I was crying because of Bob. And that was good. That was good. I thought we might go downtown in a police car. Instead, they had a cab waiting, and they were considerate, and they drove slowly. Only they drove slowly along Broadway, and I couldn't ask them not to. And I had to close my eyes to keep out the light, to hold down the memories. And that was good, too. They thought the pain I was having was grief over Bob.
He's in here, this door here. On the table here.
Just a lump under a white sheet. Just a long lump under a white sheet, all that was left of Bob. All that was left of the man who'd been my husband.
I'll have to take this sheet off his face now, Miss Reed.
Steady.
This your husband?
Yes. Yes, that's Bob.
Steady, steady.
That'll be all in here, if you'll come with me. You'll come in here.
What?
It'll only be for a moment, I'm sure. This is Lieutenant Milgram in charge of the case. This is Miss Reed.
Oh, Miss Reed. Won't you sit over here?
Thank you.
I know you must be under a terrific strain, and I won't keep you any longer than I have to, Mrs. Reed. I'll make things as easy for you as I can.
And this is George Lee.
How do you do, Mr. Lee?
How do you do? We've all been terribly shocked by this.
Yes.
Who would want to kill Bob? He had no enemies. Was it robbery or...
No, I'm afraid it was no robbery.
But then what?
You went out tonight.
Yes.
Early?
Yes, at about 7. I don't know the exact time. Close to 7. The doorman would know.
As we asked him, he said 7. When did you return to your apartment?
I hadn't been home all night.
Where were you?
Well, she was at my place. You must know that. Your men picked us up there.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes, she was with me. Oh, on business, I assure you. Mr. and Mrs. Reed were two of my dearest friends. I'm a dance director. I was working with them on a routine.
He had wanted me to say I'd been in another man's apartment. He had wanted me to come right out and say it. Cops thought it was unnatural to be too good. They became suspicious if you were too good. There was a leaky water faucet that kept dripping somewhere in the room.
And you stayed in the apartment till now?
Yes, of course.
I see. What time did you get to Mr. Lee's apartment?
About 7:15, I guess.
Doorman up there?
Yes.
Suppose he saw you go in?
Yes.
Oh, look, Inspector.
Lieutenant.
I'm sorry, Lieutenant. You're not thinking that Edith here could have had anything to do with this horrible thing?
I didn't say so, did I?
Well, I can assure you that Mrs. Reed did not stir from my apartment all evening.
Well, before you left your own place, Mrs. Reed, you asked a neighbor to go into your apartment at 11 o'clock and wake your husband up, didn't you?
Yes.
Bob was supposed to come with me to Mr. Lee's, but he had a headache and said he would lie down for a while. Try to sleep it off and join us later. I asked Mrs. Ryan to drop in on him at 11 and wake him.
Uh-huh.
I knew he would sleep it out if I left him alone, and I did want to get this routine finished.
I see.
Mrs. Ryan didn't stab him.
No, Mrs. Ryan didn't stab him. She went in at 11, as you told her, and she found Mr. Reed lying on the rug and someone standing over him with a knife in his hand.
Who?
What?
Who?
Joe, ask one of the boys to ring in, you know.
Yes, sir.
All right, that's the first portion of Suspense with Murder by an Expert, starring Jack Webb. We'll get back to the conclusion after the news, but first, these words. All right, is this Love Story? Was it Love Story? I think they had this music in the... Remember the Ryan O'Neill, Ally McGraw movie? What? Love is Blue. But I think this song was in that movie, wasn't it? Ally McGraw, remember? Ryan...
I remember the movie. I don't know this song. I don't know.
I kind of think I'm right.
I'm sure I think I'm right
about everything.
I know you do.
And,
and you're not
It doesn't
always.
Turn out to be that way. No.
You usually lose the bets, don't you?
I'm pretty bad at betting, yeah.
Right? I only bet when I'm pretty darn sure.
I once lost 10 hands in a row of blackjack at the Wynn Hotel.
I guess it wasn't a winner for you.
I mean, seriously, though, you know how hard it is to... I mean, you it's almost impossible
to lose. Well, it depends
lose.
On the player. You could make it really easy to lose.
Yeah, but I mean, the odds of losing 10
Well, it
straight...
depends how you play.
No, No, I mean, even if you play horribly, you shouldn't lose 10.
You could bust every time. No, you could stick on 11. No, I don't know how you're playing.
The dealer should bust at some point. I mean...
Maybe you busted before the dealer did.
10 hands in a row? How do you lose 10 hands in a row?
Well, you were the one playing.
Yeah.
I could teach you a few things.
Gosh.
I'm on my way tomorrow. I teach.
Good luck out there, Lisa.
I don't charge much for lessons.
Good luck out there. Just be back here in time for the WGN Radio Theater. It's
all
I want.
Are you kidding? I'll walk back if I have to.
You get your fanny back here in time for a WGN Radio Theater.
I'll be on my way. I'll be back.
See how bossy I can be?
Oh, I know. I'm well aware of your bossiness.
Okay, so we are tuning into Suspense with Murder by an Expert starring Jack Webb. Let's tune into the conclusion now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
The timing had been perfect. Everything had gone well. I was aware that I wasn't shivering anymore. I was complete master of myself now. I had nothing to be afraid of now. Why, he'd even picked up the knife.
Edith! Oh, Edith, thank heaven.
Jimmy, what?
Edith, will you tell these guys what's what? They seem to be in some kind of a fog. They think I killed Bob. I don't know what's happening to me, but...
Easy.
You don't mean he...
Yes, he's the fellow Mrs. Ryan found with a knife in his hand, his own hunting knife.
Oh, no, that's impossible. Bob was his brother. Jimmy, I know you didn't do it.
Well, of course I didn't do it. Tell him about the quarrel. Tell him about the phone call.
About the quarrel? The phone call?
Yeah, tell him that I was sort of a misfix-it for you two when things got out of hand. Tell him how I felt about Bob and you.
What quarrel, Jimmy? What phone call?
What quarrel? Well, the one you had tonight with Bob.
I?
What's the matter? Tell him about calling me up.
Jimmy, what are you talking about?
What am I talking about? You called me tonight from the apartment and said you and Bob were splitting up and... Well, why are you shaking your head?
I just don't know what you're talking about, Jimmy. Bob and I didn't quarrel. I didn't call anyone.
What time did the call come?
Oh, about 10:45, and around that, I said I'd be over and try and straighten things out.
Mrs. Reed was with you at the time?
What? Well, yes, certainly.
Did you make any calls?
No, none.
Edith, for heaven's sake!
Was anybody with you when you got the call?
No, I was in bed.
It was your knife, wasn't it, Mac?
Oh, yes, but I don't know how it got to Bob's apartment. It was there when I got there. Bob was dead when I arrived.
You quarreled with your brother on occasion, didn't you?
Not quarrel. No, I was the older brother. I had to straighten him out once or twice.
Mrs. Ryan says you often quarreled with him.
Oh, they weren't quarrels. Edith, she used to call up when things went wrong, and I'd hustle over and help out. I had a lot of influence with Bob. I tell you, Edith, you're kidding with me.
Tell him. Tell him how I felt about Bob. Go on, tell him.
You killed him. You killed him.
Edith.
I told you I loved him. I told you that the last time you asked me to leave him and go with you. I told you that the last time and the time before that and the time before that.
Edith, you...
You mean he and your husband quarreled over you?
Yes.
Edith, you don't know what you're saying.
You had to kill him. Love you. I hate you. I hate you.
What?
I'll She's die crazy. Hating you.
She's crazy. You're lying.
Take him away.
Edith! Edith!
I did it well. I did it superbly. I was sorry for Jimmy, but he didn't count, really. It was him or me. I was after happiness, and nobody was going to stand in my way. Nobody. Nobody. They drove me home in a police car. George went home alone. I suddenly remembered I hadn't a chance to give him back his watch. It was a foolish little thought to have now.
The night air will make you feel better. Cool, you know.
Yes.
Your husband was a fairly wealthy man, wasn't he?
I don't know. Yes, I suppose he was.
Didn't use much of it, did he?
I...
Why?
Well, he wanted to be a great dancer. Show business was in his blood.
Oh?
He said he was going to become as great as Astaire or Bulger or Kelly. Oh. He was going to do it the way they did it, the hard way. He wasn't going to buy success. He insisted we live on our club earnings and ignore the other...
I see. Well, you'll be quite a wealthy woman now.
I don't want to think about it.
Here we are, Chief.
Well, good night, Mrs. Reed. Oh, it's almost 2 o'clock. Good morning, Mrs. Reed.
Good morning.
Want me to see you in?
No, I'll be all right. Thank you for everything.
Oh, good evening, ma'am.
Hello, Joseph. 6, please.
I'm sorry
Thank
about
you,
but
Joseph.
You're not going to sleep up there, are you?
Yes, Joseph. There's nothing to be afraid of. When you love someone the way I love Bob, it...
Oh, yeah, I understand, ma'am. You're right. Oh, here we are, ma'am.
Thank you, Joseph. I stood in the doorway for a moment before I snapped on the light. I thought I could smell the death in the air. They do in novels. But there was nothing. Nothing. I snapped the light on and closed the door. The police had cleaned the room nicely. There was only the spot on the rug. Only the blood on the rug. There was nothing here to be afraid of. No voices. No ghosts, nothing. I was tired. I needed sleep badly. I went into the bedroom and locked the door and tried to sleep. Can you be so tired that you can't sleep? Can't even force an eyelid down over your eye? Can you be that tired? And the blackness and the quiet, they seem to be smothering me. And then I heard it. At first, I didn't know what it was. I wasn't frightened. I just didn't know what it was. George's watch, of course. The little pocket watch he'd loaned me in my handbag on the bedside table. How silly. They sound so loud in an empty room at night. I snapped on the light. It wasn't that I was afraid. There was nothing to be afraid of, not really. But suddenly, I was just a lonely little girl. I didn't want quiet now. I wanted to hear voices, happy sounds, happy noises. I wanted George. I needed to be with him. I needed terribly to be with him now.
Yes?
George?
Oh, Edith, what's the matter?
I forgot to give you back your watch.
Oh, Edith, don't be silly. At a time like
this... I know. It isn't really that.
Well, what is it?
I've got to see you. I'm coming over.
No, wait. At this hour, it's silly, Edith. It's dangerous.
I can't help it, darling. I've got to see you.
Oh, wait a minute. Not here. There's a little place on 7th Avenue, an all-night lunch place near 40th. Dillard's, I think it is.
Right away.
All right. All right.
The place looked empty when I got there, only a fat little man at the counter slicing some kind of meat. And then I saw George at the back at one of the few tables in the place. I ran back. Dearest.
Edith, no. It's not smart.
I just want you to hold me. Hold me for a moment. I need you so
much.
Edith,
please, the waiter.
Oh.
Stop trembling. You're trembling.
Yeah? Well, that beef, folks.
Two coffees, please. Do you want anything else, Edith?
Just you.
Huh?
I bought him tonight.
I don't get it.
Two coffees. Just two coffees, please.
Sure.
You're overwrought.
Why? Because I said I bought you. When will we get married, dear? Soon?
You should be home sleeping.
I suppose we will have to wait a little while for appearance's sake, but set a date, dear, now. Go ahead.
Please, the waiter.
Two coffees.
Next month, perhaps. In June.
Edith, please, let's discuss this whole thing tomorrow in the sunlight, when things are normal.
In July, then. Sometime in July.
I...
What's the matter, George?
I...
When, then? I can wait, darling. I've waited this long.
Let's get out of here.
No. No, George. I'm not going to move until you answer me, George. When are you going to marry me?
Never. I'm not going to marry you.
You're joking. Don't joke with me, George.
I'm not going to marry with you. Now, I don't want to tell you this now, but maybe it's better. Maybe the quicker we get things straight, the better.
Get things straight?
Please listen to me. Edith, you're a rich woman now. You've got a lot of money out of tonight. You got rid of him at a nice profit. So why not look at it as a good business deal and nothing else?
I don't understand.
A good business deal for both of us. We both took chances.
George, I don't...
I want half of what you inherit, the insurance and such, for my silence and my lies and my general help. I'm not in love with you, Edith. I never was. I needed the money.
There's someone else...
Yes.
There always was. Even while...
Yes.
And you want to blackmail half of my money to finance you and someone else. A business deal. The whole thing was just a business deal.
Please.
That's very funny. Bob wouldn't give me a divorce, and even if he had, I'd have gotten no money. And you and I would have needed money to live on. So I killed him. All that terror and all that blood for a business deal. A business deal. It's very funny. It's really very funny.
Are you all here?
I got out of there somehow and back to the apartment. Oh, I knew what I was going to do. I knew exactly what I was going to do. The little watch out of my handbag, the little pocket watch that George had loaned me so that everything would go right. Just right. The little watch with his initials on it and the inscription from his father. I held it in my hand a moment, listening. Then I set the hands back to 10 minutes of 11. The exact time. The time he died. The time I killed him. And I put the little watch down on the floor and ground it under my foot. I picked it up and listened. It was stopped. Broken and stopped. Stopped at 10 minutes to 11. Lieutenant Milgram, please. Lieutenant, this is Edith Reed. I lied to you, Lieutenant. George did it. We planned it together. Why am I telling you? Guilty conscience, I suppose. Oh, you can prove it all right. I found his watch under a corner of the carpet. It was broken during the struggle. Yes, it had stopped. At 10 minutes to 11. Yes, that was the time. 10 minutes to 11. It's terrible to love someone as much as that. I wonder if the other one loved him that much. But he'll never know now. And I suppose he'll never forgive me. George will never forgive me.
Suspense. Murder by an Expert, starring Lynn Berry, presented by Roma Wines. That's R-O-M-A, Roma, California Wines. Lynn Berry may soon be seen in the Eagle Eye production, Man from Texas. Tonight's suspense play was by John Shaw. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Jerome Cowan as star of Suspense. Produced and directed by William Spear for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California. Stay tuned for the thrilling adventures of the FBI in Peace and War, following immediately over most of these stations.
All right, that's Suspense, Murder by an Expert, starring Lynn Berry and Jack Webb in that story as well. Also, Wally Mayer, Hans Connery, Jerry Hausner, and Sidney Miller. You heard Bill Johnstone and Truman Bradley doing the announcing. Bill Johnstone was the shadow for many years on the radio. In fact, he took over for Orson Welles. Orson Welles was Lamont Cranston, the shadow, in 1937 and 1938. Then William Johnstone, Bill Johnstone, who you just heard there, took over the role of the shadow, and then Brett Morrison and others. That was sponsored by Roma Wines from July 24th, 1947, heard on CBS. That was Suspense. Hope you enjoyed that. We are saluting Jack Webb. He did a ton of radio and movies and TV as well. And in our next hour, we're going to tune in to an episode of Pat Novak for Hire, Good Detective Adventure, set in San Francisco. Okay, got
okay,
it?
Okay.
You know, remember the Streets of San Francisco? Remember that show with Carl Malden and Michael Landon?
Carl, I left my heart in San Francisco.
Did you? Not sure what that means. I think there was a song, something like that. By the way, I was wrong about the love song.
Yes,
The love story movie.
Yeah, it wasn't. From
I was. So I'm batting 1,000. I was wrong about that, and I've been wrong about pretty much every other bet I've made.
It was from A Summer Place. That's what one of our listeners has told us.
All right, very good. Thanks for making me look bad.
I wrote wrong as usual, and we got a big thumbs up and happy face about
that.
All right,
let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. I screwed up again.
The first time ever, right here.
I goofed up again. I said Michael Landon. I meant Michael Douglas, along with Carl Malden. You know, that's Michael, two Michaels.
It's
you know?
Very confusing.
I got a Michael Costello over here. You know, yeah, it was Michael Douglas.
And you know what? You've got a lot of buttons to push, and you fell on the ice one time like 10 years ago.
I had all of this straight before I fell on that black ice.
This just messed you all up.
Elif, do you know about this? You know what happened to me one time? It was in the middle of the winter, and I got
out
of my car.
8 years ago.
Got out of my car. I had a cup of coffee and my briefcase in my hand, right? I'll never forget this. Got out of the car, and there was black ice, and I slipped and fell. My briefcase went flying up in the air. My coffee went flying. I hit the back of my head on the black ice. Never been the same since.
That's why you have a bump on your head.
I have a bump on my head, and I have and I goof up. I say Michael Landon when I really mean Michael Douglas. I say Lisa Wylf instead of Lisa Wolf. I used to say, what was the guy, the news guy? What was his
name? Steve Ruxton.
I could never say Steve Ruxton's name right. Did I just say it right?
Yes, you did.
This poor guy. I could never say his name right. I think he didn't want to work with me anymore.
I don't blame him. Yeah. I don't want to work
I don't
with
blame
you.
Him.
No, I'm kidding.
I messed up his name so badly pretty much every single time, and I really, truly tried to say it right every time.
The last time he did it, I was laughing so hard. I was crying. I was under the desk.
I think this guy is scarred. This poor guy is scarred for life the way I messed up his name. I get Roger Badish's name right.
Somehow he's got your name, Elif.
I got Elif's name right. But I don't know. It's the black ice. I'm
yeah,
bringing
it
all
about the ice.
On the black
I
ice.
I remember when that happened. I remember you explaining something to me one time, and you're like, it's because 3 days ago I fell on this black ice, and I can't remember anything anymore.
I can't remember anything.
Didn't you get like an MRI or something
yeah.
afterwards?
They couldn't find a brain in there anywhere. There
lost.
Was one, but it was really tiny.
Like a pea size.
It was, yeah, super small. They said, man, you have a really thick cranium, and then there's this tiny little pea in
well,
there.
Well, we've always known that. So.
But in that pea is a lot of information about classic radio.
Classic, it's full of classic
it's,
radio. You know what I think it is? There is no room left for anything besides classic radio in
right.
that brain.
Well,
that's it. It's full.
Actually, for me, that's very advantageous because I do host the WGN radio. I'm one of the two hosts of the WGN radio theater.
So it's all good.
And is even though you do know a lot about classic radio, I know a teeny bit more.
I cannot argue
but
with
she's
that.
Learning. This Lisa Wolf is learning. Now, don't forget, I've been studying classic radio since I was 12 years of age.
No, I would not compete
right?
with that.
He knows how to do all of this, but doesn't know how to use his iPhone except for emailing, texting, and actually dialing the numbers.
Although dialing can cause some issues.
I
as
have
well.
An iPhone, the iPhone whatever, the latest one, and I don't have even one app on it.
This
not
is
one,
correct.
Not even one app.
Oh, and he don't you use your camera too on it?
Yes, I can
okay,
use my camera.
Okay, you can
camera.
At least do that too.
Yes, I so. Use my camera, but not one app.
But that's all he does on it.
Yeah.
That's all he knows how to do on it.
That's okay.
Every time he gets a new phone, he actually can't convert all of the information into the new
Are
phone.
You
he
kidding?
Has no idea.
Convert?
But
he hands me the phone and says, Mike, I got a new phone. I got a new
here.
iPad. I don't know what I need to do to make it all of this information
but
on
he is
new...
the classic radio guru.
Exactly.
So we all have our strengths.
Yeah,
it's
thank
okay.
you. I'm a guru. Is that what you
called
me?
I called you a guru.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a guru.
Hey, well, at least you're good at something.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got to have one thing that they're pretty good at. Classic radio is my thing. Well, it's been a long time, you know. Let's see. I was 12 years old when I started. And I'm 18 now, so it's been
six years.
Been 6 years.
Yeah,
it's a long time. All right, so we're in the midst of tuning into a salute to Jack Webb. We have a terrific Jack Webb episode in our next hour. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning, just like we always are, Saturdays and Sunday nights from 11 to 2 o'clock in the morning on this legendary station, Radio 720 WGN. I have no problem saying Esmeralda Leon. Not at all. I have no problem saying your name, Esmeralda.
And that's a doozy.
No, I mean, yeah, it rolls right off the tongue, no problem. Roger Badish, no problem. David Jennings, no problem. I could not say Steve Ruxton. And I say it now, fine, but he's not.
It was funny. The moment you had to say it, you'd get nervous and you'd
yeah.
look down at your paper
and
you
I'd
always
have it phonetically,
mispronounced
I would have it phonetically spelled. I was
I think
like,
you got nervous because you did it wrong so many times. You fumbled it at that point. You just couldn't. Like,
I was like,
back.
This poor guy, he's doing the news up there. He deserves me to say his name correctly. And I would say it wrong pretty much every single time. And in the very rare occasions that I said it right, I was so proud of myself.
I had a good laugh. So, yeah, what can
yeah,
I say?
Yeah, Lisa would just be, we would, Lisa would, I would be mortified that I said it wrong. And Lisa would be on the floor just rolling.
Oh, did I have fun with that?
Having so much fun that I just completely.
Just thinking about it gives me the giggles.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, well. Anyway, this is the WGN Radio Theater. It is 6 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning on Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. And, of course, to all of our vets and everyone that's ever helped keep this country free. We really appreciate that very, very, very much. And we have a terrific episode of Pat Novak for Hire coming your way. This is a really interesting series, Lisa. Jack Webb starred as Pat Novak. And it was really, really, the dialogue was really crazy. You'll hear it. I'll talk about it in a minute. But it was set in San Francisco. He was a detective, worked on the waterfront. He rented boats, and then as a side job, he sort of was a detective. And very, very interesting. I think you'll really get a kick out of it. That's coming up in a minute. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
In the crime drama Death Wish, this actor plays a mild-mannered father who was transformed into a killing machine after his family is torn apart.
What is it called? Death Wish? I wonder if this is like a sequel to the Death Wish Charles Bronson movies, because there were Death Wish movies with Charles Bronson.
I don't know that.
All right, so if you can identify this celebrity, you'll win what?
Oh, 2 tickets to the Lila Art Center to see Barefoot in the Park. Great play.
Very good. Okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This is the star of the Die Hard franchise.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequin shirts.
All right, if you know who that is, call us, 312-981-7200. And no, it is not Michael Landon. Give us a call, and we'll find our winner after this break. Wish you were handier around the house? Call me. That's what this is, Blondie. Call me.
I got it.
I got that right. I got one right, finally. Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with some help from local home experts. You can do it with Weekend Workbench, Sunday mornings at 11 on WGN-TV. Lisa, call me.
Okay. Call me, baby.
Hey, remember that commercial? Remember that commercial with, it was the talking microphone. Hey, I'll come around to pick you up later. Remember that?
I don't know
crazy
what you're talking about.
Okay.
You probably made it up.
Another black ice incident, probably.
Just made it up. We are back. We're a little slap happy, but we're back, and we're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip again.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequin shirts.
Gersh, are you with us?
I am.
Glad to have you.
Glad to be on your show. It's a wonderful show. Great show. Love it.
Thank you, Gersh. Do you know who that actor is?
Yippee-ki-yay, Bruce Willis.
You are right, and yippee-ki-yay, you have won. I hope you enjoy this. You got 2 tickets to Barefoot in the Park. It's playing right now through June 19th at the Lila Art Center, which is in downtown Des Plaines. And you can check them
out at
lilaartcenter.com. I love Barefoot in the Park. I love the play. Yep. It's a great show. I know you saw that play. Actually, Carl does not see plays, but he did see Barefoot in the Park. Mm-hmm. You remember with Corey and Brad and their newlyweds?
It's
a romantic comedy, but it's not Carl's.
I don't have a romantic bone in my body, but I saw it for some reason. I think because
that was Jane Fonda. The movie was Jane Fonda and Robert Redford. It was great.
Sounds great.
All right. Take care, Gersh. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right, Lisa Wolf. It's time for Pat Novak for Hire. I was telling you, this is an interesting series, a detective drama. It aired on the West Coast on KGO in San Francisco from 1946 through 1949. And Jack Webb starred as Pat Novak. And the scripts were by his roommate at the time, Richard L. Green. The series was set in San Francisco on the waterfront, and Novak rented boats and he did odd jobs for money. Novak would take on a job and usually find himself in trouble with the police. Inspector Hellman was the captain of the police department. He was played by Raymond Burr. Later he was Ironside, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Perry Mason as well. And when Pat needed advice, he went to Jocko Madigan, a drunken ex-doctor played by Tudor Owen. So there's like a drunk on this show. You'll hear a drunk on this program as well.
A what?
Well, a drunk. When Webb left the series for Johnny Madero and later Dragnet, Ben Morris took over the role. But they're not as good as the Jack Webb ones. And we have one for you now, a Jack Webb episode called Go Away, Dixie Gillian, from November 24th, 1946. Here's Jack Webb in part one of Pat Novak for Hire.
Pat Novak for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak, for Hire. That's what the sign out in front of my office says, Pat Novak, for Hire. Down on the waterfront in San Francisco, you always bite off more than you can chew. It's tough on your windpipe, but you don't go hungry. And down here, a lot of people figure it's better to be a fat guy in a graveyard than a thin guy in a stew. That way, you can be sure of a tight fit.
Oh, I rent boats and do anything else that makes a sound like money. It works out all right. If your mother doesn't mind you coming home for Easter in a box. I found that out Wednesday night at about 9 o'clock. I closed the shop early and I came home to read. It wasn't a bad book if you ever wanted to start a forest fire. It was one of those historical things, and the girl in it wandered around like a meat grinder in ribbons. I was moving along all right. She was just getting her second wind before going after the world's record when the door to my apartment opened and the place began to get kind of crowded. From where I sat, the crowd looked good. She sauntered in, moving slowly from side to side like 118 pounds of warm smoke. Her voice was all right, too. It reminded you of a furnace full of marshmallows.
Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for knocking.
I don't think you mind my coming in without warning.
No, I get the cabbage smell from next door the same way.
Does it pay to be that polite, Mr. Novak?
Saves you the trouble of saying please. What's on your mind?
That bottle in front of you. Will you pour me a drink?
No, I won't. You'll save dough if you look up a bartender.
All right. I came to use you instead of your whiskey anyway.
Let's hear.
My name is Lee Underwood. I'll give you $300 to do something for me. It'll only take an hour.
That's too much dough unless it's murder, and if it is murder, it's not enough dough.
Are you afraid?
I just don't like paid murder. I told you, when you get caught, the pain gets expensive.
If it were murder, I'd do it myself. Mr. Novak, I want you to frighten someone for me.
Why don't you hire a friend? Are they too pretty?
It's a man named Dixie Gillian. You'll find him in an office down on Folsom Street at this address. I promise nothing will happen to you.
That's what they told Benedict Arnold.
He'll be in this office until 11 tonight. I want you to go in and see him. Tell him you're from Adrian, and that he's to get out of town by tomorrow noon.
Suppose he wants to put it off.
He won't. Don't let him know who hired you. Just tell him Adrian said to leave.
Look, lady, you better go on home. For $300, I won't buy a tissue paper plot. Now tell me more or say goodbye.
There's not much more I can tell you, except there won't be any trouble. He's a rotten little beast, and I want him frightened badly.
Why?
He's been bothering my sister.
Why doesn't he bother you?
Because I bother back too fast. Do you want the $300, Mr. Novak?
It's going to be a long summer. Put it on the table.
Good. And you'll need this, too.
No, you keep that. I don't want a gun.
It's empty. Don't worry. See? No shells. It's perfectly safe.
Now, look, sis, I got a nasty disposition. You can rent that for $300, but if you want more, find a gunsel.
I don't want you to be a gunsel. That's why I want you to use this gun. I know it's empty. Use it on Dixie and he'll scare fast. It's just a way to save some breath.
All right. It's your $300.
You'd better go now.
Yeah. Wait till I get a coat, will you? If your doorbell rings, don't play mouse.
Oh?
Because I may look you up.
Am I too young to ask why?
Because if anything goes wrong, I'll be around looking for you. And from there on, it won't be nice. I'll dirty you up like a locker room towel.
Relax, Patsy. You'll never learn to fall in love that way.
She handed me the gun and walked out of my apartment. Seeing her leave made you feel like Frank Buck losing an argument. She walked with a nice, easy swing of a satisfied leopard. And for a small leopard, she had pretty good spots, too. Well, I put the gun in my overcoat pocket and I went down to Folsom Street. The address was down near the bridge entrance and the street was deserted except for a couple of winos near the corner trying to buy back 1926 at a dollar a jug. I stopped in front of the place. It was a machinery company and I could see a light burning in the back. I began to walk through the place. It was so quiet you could hear a worm with whooping cough, and there were enough shadows around to keep a ghost happy for years. When I got to the office back in the corner, through the glass, I could see a man sitting at the desk. When I opened the door and walked in, he didn't seem surprised.
Come on in, mister. You're bad on noise.
Yeah?
That's right. You make too much for a thief and not enough for a customer. What do you want?
About 10 words, if you're Dixie Gillian.
Go ahead.
You better look up a timetable.
What makes you that tough?
This.
Oh. Well, you look tougher with a gun. Does it make you talk faster?
Now, look, I'm going to say it slow, mister. Pack up your rompers and get out.
Is that you talking or somebody else?
I'm just the guy with a gun. Adrian does the talking.
And he says get out.
That's right. You got the whole message now.
All right, you told me, so wander out and spend your dough.
I will.
Oh, you'll need part of it, though. Because I'm going to give you an answer for Adrian. I'm going to take that gun away from you, mister. You can pick the pieces out of your head on the way home.
You better stand back or I'll share it with you.
You've got your offer, mister. Let's see you make good.
I'll save your muscle, fella.
Drop that gun!
Save your muscle, fella. The gun's empty.
Somebody fooled us, mister.
Sometimes you can get a home run with a half swing. That's the way it was this time. He couldn't have made it with a prayer book in both hands. He slid down to the floor and trembled for a minute and then flattened out like a leaf in a pool of water. Just before he died, he grabbed his side as if he didn't like the way it hurt. And then he didn't care. I rolled him on his back and let him look at the ceiling. His eyes were open and he looked surprised like a guy who didn't figure on a change in the weather. There was a scar that ran across his forehead and dug deep into his hairline. And he was lying there with a bunch of pink gum showing as if he was trying to pick up a few bucks with a toothpaste ad. Well, I didn't have time to tell him how sorry I was, because if homicide caught me here, I'd have about as much chance as a canary in a basement full of cats. I started for the door, but right then I knew I could start ordering birdseed. It was Hellman, and he walked over to look at the body.
Hello, Novak. The guy looks embarrassed.
Yeah, I guess he is, Hellman.
What's he doing dead?
Putting in a beef somewhere, I guess. He rates it.
He'll like you for that, Novak. How'd it happen?
A team play. We worked it out together.
But you've got the gun.
That's right. I got the gun.
Yeah. You feel like a bet?
No, just keep stealing the old way.
You know how I feel, Novak?
You feel flabby to anybody else, but to yourself, I suppose you feel good. Look, I walked in here with a gun. There was some quick fight talk, and I killed him, but it's still not a good rap.
I can get a long price on it for you, Novak.
I'll bet you can, Hellman. You can give me a bad deal, but part of the time it'll be from the other side of the deck.
Worse than that, Novak. It'll be all the time. And I want to watch you, because I think you're going to be a crybaby.
I'm going to scream, if that's what you mean, Hellman. I'm going to scream about a gal that sent me in here with an empty gun.
That's a big hole for a cap pistol, Novak.
I got a last-minute curve. It was empty once.
Yeah, that's the only way they make a gun. I don't want you for an hour ago. I want you for this dead guy on the floor.
All right, all right. I told you I didn't come in here to kill the guy. I don't know him. He may even be a good guy. I'm sorry he's dead.
All right, Novak. Just wait a few weeks. You can tell him personally.
Hellman had me up against the rail and he knew it. When we left there, he was wearing a big, toothy smile. It was big enough to sew on his ears. He called the coroner and told him to pick up the stiff, and then we rode downtown. He dropped the gun into ballistics and hauled me into his office. The reporters were there. He gave them the whole story and told them how to spell Hellman. After that, we wound up at the desk, and he booked me on suspicion of murder. The next hour and a half was the kind of stuff they don't write about in the paper. They call it interrogation, and when you're finished, you've been through a lot of tight spots, like an atom up at Caltech. About 11 o'clock, Hellman brought me into his office, and from there on, it happened kind of fast.
I just talked to the DA. He's going to streamline things for you.
Well, he's going to look funny going to trial on a guy you can't identify.
We'll find out all about the dead guy.
Well, you can't count his fingers without making a mistake. If you want to know who he is, talk to that girl. Her name's Lee Underwood.
We've been through all that, Novak. Now suppose you tell me who Dixie Gillian is.
I don't know, Hellman. The girl said his name was Dixie Gillian.
I won't press you. I don't have to, Novak. I've got the only parlay I need. You, the dead guy, and a big fat murder gun.
Sure.
Yeah, Hellman talking. Yeah, I know it was a .38. They're crazy down in ballistics. I saw him standing over the dead guy. They must have made a mistake, that's all. No, no, I don't want him in here. I don't want him in here. Hey, Tony. Tony, I... Ah.
You're getting pale. You need some more rouge, Hellman.
I got some bad news, Inspector. Well, keep it or you'll take more home to your wife. I'll talk to you later.
No, talk to him now, Hellman. If that bullet doesn't match the gun, talk to him now.
That's right, Inspector. A .38 bullet, but it won't match the gun you brought in. It's got to match. I came in and found him standing there. He's already admitted it.
It's a neat trick, then. If he fired the bullet out of that gun, he retooled it in midair.
I'm not that fast, Hellman. Come on, get out of that chair so you'll have room to squirm.
You keep still, Novak.
I won't bother you. I'm going home.
Huh?
I'm walking out of your jail, Hellman. You got a broken-down .38 that won't fit anything but your thumbs. You can't hold me on that.
I found you over the body. I can hold you on suspicion of murder.
Yeah, but it'll hurt tomorrow morning, Hellman. The papers will be down for a follow-up, and you'll have to tell them what it looks like out in left field.
I'll handle them.
You can't afford to let them start laughing at you. People get the idea it's your face.
You can save carfare if you stay right here, because I'll have you back by noon tomorrow.
You're not that good, Hellman. You couldn't hold a moth with a searchlight. The town ought to thank you.
What?
Oh, it's a nice jail, Hellman. With you around, it'll last for years. When I walked walked out of headquarters, I had a nice mess to juggle. It was like trying to walk the baby on a floor full of marbles. If things didn't add up for Hellman, they weren't going to do any better for me. I knew that gun I had went off. If it did, what happened to the bullet and where did the other one come from? And why weren't there two shots? Well, I couldn't put my finger on a thing and nothing added up. It was like trying to follow a grain of rice in a Shanghai suburb. So I looked up Lee Underwood's address and I went by her apartment. A girl downstairs told me that she worked at a nightclub out on the Bay Shore Highway. Well, I had to hit a couple of places, so I looked up the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. A good man until he began to figure the last drink in the bottle is just as easy to get at as the first. I found him in a little leather-trimmed sink on Powell Street. It was a grimy little hole where they washed the glasses once a week in stale beer. But Jocko was more at home than a vulture in Calcutta.
Ah, Patsy, you're just in time to celebrate my return to health. Something mild for Mr. Novak, a double stinger, perhaps.
No, forget it, Jocko. I gotta talk to you.
Patsy, I've just passed through a crisis. A few minutes ago, they set before me a glass with a woman's lipstick all around the rim.
All right, Jocko.
I took one gulp and looked at the glass, and in this dim light, I thought I was bleeding to death. It took them 10 minutes and 3 mirrors to calm me down.
Jocko, I'm in trouble. You gotta help me.
But they washed the glass for me. In ammonia. They must have left a little ammonia in the glass because the next drink had a very odd tang about it. I've had 3 more just like it, a sort of ammonia Collins.
All right, all right.
So far, they've been using domestic ammonia. When the imported stuff comes in, I may give up whiskey altogether.
Calm down, will you, Jocko? I got a bum shake tonight.
Yes?
I either killed a guy or thought I did.
That uses up the alternatives. What are you doing now, taking a vote?
I got hired to scare a guy down on Folsom Street. 10 minutes later, the guy was dead.
Patsy, you take your work too seriously. Couldn't you have just scared him into a lingering illness instead of killing him?
One of the props was an empty gun. Only when the fight came, it grew bullets. Hellman walked in right after on a telephone tip.
What are you doing out of the gas chamber?
The whole thing backfired down at headquarters. The bullet and the phony gun wouldn't match. Oh, it doesn't add up, Jocko. That call to Hellman's a tip-off. I was framed, but why wasn't I framed all the way?
Who is the dead man?
Oh, just a guy with a falling blood count. His name was supposed to be Dixie Gillian, but there's no identification and no record on him.
You shouldn't have hired out as a gunsel.
I told you, I didn't hire out as a gunsel. It was somebody else's idea.
You have no conscience, Patsy. It's just a sort of soap opera rule of thumb you put into practice now and then, but no real conscience. You'd let a dying woman lie in the middle of the highway unless her head was resting on a pile of savings bonds.
All right, Jocko, I'll cry with you later. I need help now.
What sort of help?
I want you to break into a girl's apartment.
Yes?
Don't worry, she won't be home.
Is that supposed to be an incentive?
It's at this address here, up on O'Farrell. Her name is Lee Underwood. She's the one who hired me.
If the girl's not there, what am I supposed to find?
Anything that'll connect her with the dead man. He's a big guy with a scar.
That doesn't help much.
You can't miss. Go through the desk and drawers. Pick up everything you can, will you? And leave a message at my place.
As soon as I finish this drink.
Oh, hurry up, will you? Jocko, leave the glass alone and get going.
Don't rush me.
Hurry up, will you? The glass is empty anyway.
Yes, that's what you thought about that gun, but the fellow got an awful jolt out of it. Good night, lover.
That's the first portion of Pat Novak for Hire. The writing is pretty interesting, huh? It's kind of like very, I don't know. I don't know how you would even describe it. It's like purple dialogue. It's very strange, the dialogue. But it was a very popular series back in the 1940s. This is called Go Away, Dixie Gillian. It stars Jack Webb as Pat Novak for Hire. And we'll get back to it after this. Ooh, I like this. This is from Pulp Fiction,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, that one you got.
Pulp Fiction.
Quentin.
We were just talking about Bruce Willis. He was the Cat's Pride, and he was fantastic in Pulp Fiction, wasn't he? Do you remember? He was the boxer in that movie.
Yeah, that movie.
Do you
movie,
not remember that movie?
I do, but the movie was so violent that it was just beyond my
comfort zone. Did you see it?
Zone.
Pulp Fiction?
I saw the beginning, and I think I saw half of it.
You have to see the whole thing.
I know, I want to.
Honestly, it's not on my list, but I know it's very well received, and Carl loves it. But
oh my gosh, what
it was
a movie.
Like
fantastic movie.
Difficult for me. To
yeah,
watch.
I mean, it's violent, that's for sure.
It was very
it's
difficult.
Definitely violent. But Bruce
yeah.
Willis is amazing in it, and John Travolta is so
yeah.
great in that movie.
He was.
He really, really. And he was great. I mean, he has a dance, like kind of a dance scene. He did. He's great in that.
I remember.
And, I mean, just this is a
Didn't
great movie.
Didn't we see it at the same event?
I think so. I think
we were together. Yeah, not together, but together.
Yeah, we had a showing of it. I believe was it that movie? Was it Pulp Fiction or was it Inglourious Basterds?
Oh, never mind. You're right.
Yeah, it was Inglourious Basterds. Can I say that on the air? I guess
say
so.
What?
You said it. Just said it.
It's a movie title.
It's the title.
So I just
You're
said
not
it.
Really
yeah.
like referring
well, I mean,
to
it is a, it is
anybody
a,
in particular.
It's a four-letter word, isn't it? Kind of, no. But it was a great movie, I'll tell you that. Glorious. It was a great movie. Hang on. Inglorious. There you go. Yeah. I have my one sound effect. I have one sound effect
covered.
Over here, and it's one button. I only have. It's pretty hard to mess it up because it's just one button.
Oh, I'm sure you could figure out a way.
Yeah.
I'm sure we have messed that up, actually, yeah. in the past.
Don't say we.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we mentioned our Facebook page at all
on
this edition.
Oh, I don't think so.
And we really want our listeners to go to our Facebook page and like us. We want our program to get more likes.
And to do that, you just hop on the Facebook.
And you have to hop when you do it. You
yes.
have to hop on. You
it's
can't
be
jump or sprint or skip. You got to hop right on.
No, it's much smoother when you hop on the Facebook.
Use a pogo stick. It'll be
I love
perfect.
Pogo sticks.
I could never ride a pogo stick.
You ride it?
Well, you ride it. Yeah, you hop on it. I could never do it.
I'm good at pogo sticks.
Can you do the hula hoop?
I'm great at hula hoops.
Oh, gosh.
I won a hula hoop contest.
Really?
This is a true story.
How long did you have to hula hoop for?
It wasn't just the length of time you had to hula hoop, like on your neck and on your legs
and on
your
arms. So are
you
one of these people that can take a hula hoop and just keep going with it the
whole
time?
Yeah, I barely move. It just seems
Elif,
to go right around the hip.
Can you do it? Can you,
I'm iffy.
You're iffy on the hula hoop?
I can do it for a short period, but that's about it.
Really? How about you, Mike? Can you
actually, when I was a kid, I could actually do it for a pretty long
really?
Time.
Oh,
when
man.
I was a kid, yeah.
Cannot do a hula hoop.
I don't think I can
well,
do
know,
it now.
Some people can play ping pong,
yeah.
and some people can hula hoop.
You don't want to mess with
so,
me at ping pong.
And you don't
want to
mess with me in a hula hoop,
no.
I'm just saying. All or right. a pogo stick. I'm pretty darn great.
Well, there you go. And do you think Jack Webb could do a hula hoop?
I don't know.
Probably. I don't think so. I don't think there was any hula hoops back then when Jack was around.
Really?
Jack Webb. Now,
he probably could have learned. I mean, he's a actor.
I'm guessing hula hoops were made in the 60s. That's my guess. I'm probably wrong.
Probably.
Because I'm guessing on something. I'm going to guess hula hoops
well,
were made.
Well, if anybody knows out in Radio Land, let us know.
All right, let's do this. Elif, what year was a hula hoop invented? Don't look it up. Just take a guess. 19 what?
1953.
All right. Mike, what's your guess?
1944.
Lisa?
I was going to say the 50s. So
okay.
I'm going to...
Take a guess.
You need to know the exact year?
Just take a... No, you're just guessing. When
1950.
All right. I'm going to say 1960.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see. We'll figure it out.
All right.
We'll figure it out while we're tuning into the conclusion now of Pat Novak for Hire.
I went by a horse parlor on O'Farrell Street and borrowed a car from a guy. It was after midnight when I started down the Bayshore Highway, and about a half hour later, I pulled up in front of the Cat's Paw. It was a long, rambling place on the left side of the road. There was no plan. It just followed the erosion line until they ran out of material. There was enough neon in front to light a main intersection in heaven. In the lobby, I saw a picture of Lee Underwood, one of those shadowy things that was supposed to make you think she'd die in a cold climate. She was sitting at a piano with a little microphone in front of her, and you got the idea right away. She didn't have much of a voice, but plenty of songs that made your wife lean over and ask you to explain. I asked a 50-year-old busboy, and he said she was back in her dressing room getting ready for the 1 o'clock show. When I walked in, she was sitting in front of a mirror working on an upswept hairdo. If she swept it up anymore, it was going to leave her head. I stood behind her, looking at the pink, fresh part of her neck that didn't show when the hair was down.
You seem fascinated, Betsy.
No, I just want to know where to break it.
Oh. Sit down on the footstool next to me.
Yeah.
That's it. I like to look down on people. Let me brush that strand of hair back. What do you like it in your eyes?
Now brush it back so I can see your answers. Who's Dixie Gillian?
What difference does it make?
None to him and some to me. He's dead.
No, he couldn't be dead.
Yeah, well, he'd like to believe that, too. I couldn't sell him that story about an empty gun.
He couldn't have been killed with that gun.
No?
No. I put in a blank, Patsy.
Somebody used a hard-working bullet because Dixie's dead.
There was no reason to kill him.
I don't understand.
Yeah, well, that makes you even with homicide, but they got a bigger team. Now, look, I made a diagram, Angel. Up at my place, I ran over murder with you. I don't like it. If you kill people, you don't get invited out enough. So if it's you or me on this one, I'm going to push you all the way.
Don't understand it, Patsy.
Who's Dixie Gillian?
He was after some microfilm. I thought I could scare him away.
You better be ready to identify him because homicide stopped. Even that scar didn't help.
What scar, Patsy?
The scar across his face. There's no record on him.
No, no, Patsy. Everything goes wrong. Everything you touch goes wrong. That's the wrong man, Patsy.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for a recount.
You've got to get to that body, Patsy. I don't know how, but some way you've got to get to him.
You look good, Lee. You'll make a nice picture.
Wait a minute, Dixie.
You don't need your coat. Come on.
I don't know how it happened, Dixie. I didn't mean it that way.
If you like it that way, all right. Bring your boyfriend, too.
No, don't let him, Patsy.
The gun's too big. I'm going with him. It was a short trip. He led us out of the dressing room and down a thin hall to the back door. On the way past the kitchen, you could smell onions and used grease, and that's about all you noticed except the sound of a jukebox somewhere out in front and somebody laughing in a loud, mirthless way. When we got to the door, it was raining outside. We walked about 40 feet over near some trees where the dark was working overtime, and the gunsel made her stop.
Pick your spot, Lee.
You can't be that crazy, Dixie.
She's gonna get wet, mister.
You'll have a little trouble yourself.
When I woke up, it was still raining. I was lying on top of the mud like a stubborn seed. My wallet was gone, and the gunsel had ripped open my pockets. I stood up and walked over for a last look at Lee. The rain had washed the makeup off her face, and she looked small and tired as she lay there, like a broken doll that had been tossed out in the rain. I guess she was. Well, I got to my car, and I drove back to town. I checked my place, but there was no word from Jocko, so I went up to Lee's apartment. When I opened the door, the room was dark, but I knew somebody was on the rug. Either that or they'd varnished the floor with bourbon. I flipped on the light and bent over Jocko. Hey, wake up, Jocko. All right, Jocko, come on, wake up. Come on.
A little ammonia, I think, would bring me around.
What happened?
I was sapped, I guess.
Everybody's got the same act tonight.
Help me up.
Come on.
Where have you been?
I went down to meet the girl.
Where'd you meet her, in a swimming pool?
I've been in the rain all night. She's gonna stay longer. What'd you find out?
The fellow with the scar is her husband.
Yeah?
There's a picture in the desk.
Are there any more pictures?
A few. Take a look.
Okay. Where, in here?
Yes.
Well, well.
Who's he?
It must be Dixie Gillian. He was down to pay off a debt tonight. She called him Dixie once.
There's a note with that name and an address in the other drawer.
He's our boy. We better get up there.
Not if he's already killed two other people.
We can't wait for Hellman. If he gets away, I'm all through. I won't have a leg to stand on.
That's my point. When the other fellow gets through with us, we won't have much standing to do.
I felt better now. Gillian was the only guy left in the picture, so I dragged Jocko up to his place. It was an apartment up on Post Street. The elevator operator took us up to the 8th floor and said that Gillian had come in a few minutes before. There was no answer, so we tried the door, and it was open. Jocko didn't like the idea.
Patsy, this is folly. Risking my life is one of the bravest things you do.
Keep still, Jocko. What are we supposed to do? The door was open, wasn't it?
Saw a lot of graves, but I've never been tempted.
Hey, look at the furniture. There's been a fight in here. I'll look in here, and you check in the bedroom, huh?
Well, if I'm not right back, don't expect me at all.
All right.
Patsy.
Yeah.
Patsy, come here.
All right.
There's somebody on the fire escape.
Come here. Stand back here.
Oh, he's not moving. He was leaning that way when I first saw him.
All right, I'll get on this side. You raise the window. Now go easy, Jocko. Can you see him from there?
Raise it a little more.
All right.
He's still leaning there. I can reach out.
All right, watch yourself. If he's kidding, you'll lose an arm.
I've got it. Good. Raise the window more.
Take...
Patsy, he's falling. Give me a hand.
Oh, here, let me through there.
Oh, it's too late. I can't hold it.
Hang on, Chuckle.
He's falling. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, he was probably dead anyway.
If he wasn't, that was a step in the right direction.
Well, it was an easy night to die. Three of them had checked out already, and there was still time to look for more. Jocko and I went downstairs to see the guy. He was lying face down in the alley, and as you looked at him, you got the funny feeling he belonged there. He didn't disturb the scene. He just fitted in like a dirty, wet newspaper under a grandstand. There was a gun in his pocket, probably the same one that killed the girl, but there was no way of knowing. Jocko and I watched him for a minute, but your eyes begin to hurt when you see your only warm lead in a deep freeze. It was past two when I got down to headquarters and looked up Hellman. I briefed him on the girl and the guy in the alley, and then I asked him if any microfilm had turned up on the first guy in the morgue. That was a waste of time. Hellman couldn't find a brass ring in a dead man's nose, but we went over to the morgue for another look. So far, it was working out like a crossword puzzle torn in half.
It's your time, Novak. I got more after tomorrow. You haven't.
The microfilm must be on the guy. Three people have been killed for it, and I got roughed up just for laughs.
We searched the guy once. Here it is.
All right.
Help me roll it out.
Yeah. Well, well. He sure got thin under that sheet, didn't he?
Wait a minute.
Oh, you run a good morgue, Hellman. What'll the paper say when they hear the stiff got up and walked out?
They got him in the wrong place or something. He didn't walk out.
Well, he's gone, Hellman. You got an answer?
He's been moved, I tell you. The guy was dead, and I saw him put in here. Couldn't be walking around with a hole in the middle of his back.
I don't know, Hellman. You do it with one in your head. Don't sell the guy short. When Hellman found out the body was gone, he stood there and stared at the empty slab. And then he started looking around in a nervous way, like a man trying to find the sugar bowl at a restaurant counter. A few minutes later, he turned and walked out of the morgue, and we were halfway downtown when it happened. It must have hit us at the same time, sharp and quick, like a piece of candy in a bad tooth. The guy back in the alley had come off that slab in the morgue. We got out to Dixie's place, and we began to check. There was a phone operator downstairs, and she said that Dixie had put through a call about 2 hours ago. Hellman checked the number, and it was the ticket office of a railroad. We got downtown and ran through the timetable. There was a train leaving the Oakland Mole in about 40 minutes. Well, it was an outside chance, but tonight that was the only kind for sale. We got down in time to slide on the last ferry over to the Mole. It was still dark out when the ferry pulled away from the slip and started across the bay. But over toward the Berkeley Hills, it was beginning to get light. The sky was the color of a bruise spot on a man's arm.
We'll get up to the pilot house and tell him not to dock until we've gone through all the passengers.
He doesn't have to be on this one.
We'll check the train when we get there.
Wait a minute. You don't have to check. There's your boy.
Where?
Up there on the rail, see? Now, you better go easy, Hellman. He's not a scale model.
Yeah. Just walk quietly until we're behind him.
All right.
Turn around, mister. You'll get a better view.
Hello, Novak. How was the wind and the rain in your hair?
Meet Inspector Hellman. You better turn in your ticket.
I hope you brought your muscle.
Grab him, Hellman.
That's what I'm trying to do.
All right, copper. Watch it. I'm being pitched over on the rail.
I'm worried, Hellman.
Watch it, Novak. I'm going over. Oh!
That's one down, mister. Now for you.
I landed on the deck and watched him disappear into the dark. Halfway down, the guy turned in. I got up and followed him down the ladder and along the main deck. He ducked into one of the engine spaces, and I started in to look for him. It didn't take long, because he turned out to be real helpful.
You got the idea yet, Novak?
I'll come closer. Tell me then.
Suit yourself. But I'll knock you down hard when you show.
Watch that platform. You're backing into trouble.
Stay back there, Novak.
Watch out for that platform, will you? You're backing into the engine.
I kind of wound up last, huh?
Yeah, that's the way it looks. Did you get the microfilm?
Yeah. I got a big hurt. Does it show?
A little.
Yeah. It's been a long night, Novak. Huh?
Yeah, but your worries are over. It's almost dawn.
I don't know if I can use it, but I'll give it to you.
He fished Hellman out of an oil slick a few minutes later. It was the first time his hair ever looked good. Dixie Gillian lasted long enough to piece the story together for homicide. Lee Underwood knew her husband was carrying microfilm, and she was worried, so she hired me to scare off Gillian. Oh, it might have worked, too, but the first slip came when Lee's husband went by to make a deal with Dixie without telling her. When I jumped him, Dixie was outside, and figured it was a double cross, so he killed him with a silencer when that phony gun that Lee gave me went off. Dixie knew that the microfilm was still on the dead man. The only way he could be sure was to get the body out of the morgue. He took it up to his apartment, and when he got the film, he planted the gun and put the body on the fire escape. It was a little safer that way. There was a 50-50 chance the police would miss it the first time around, and he'd have a fair lead. Almost worked out for him, except for that phone call. The microfilm was in a capsule next to the roof of the guy's mouth. So old, it was new again. Well, Hellman asked only one question. In that fight, did I have anything to do with pushing him against the rail? I told him, sometimes those ferry boats roll as much as 45 degrees.
The Armed Forces Radio Service has just brought you Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb. Pat Novak is produced by William P. Russo. Jocko Madigan is played by Tudor Owen. Inspector Hellman is played by Raymond Burr. Music was composed and conducted by Basil Adnam. Be with us again next week when over most of these same stations we'll bring you Pat Novak for Hire. Pat Novak for Hire was previously released by ABC, the American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States, and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
That's Pat Novak for Hire, a broadcast from November 24th, 1946, Go Away, Dixie Gillian, starring Jack Webb. Basil Adlam doing the music. There's a name you don't hear anymore. Basil.
Basil?
Yeah, people don't name their kids Basil anymore.
I don't think too many people are named Basil. Even then. I don't know.
You know, you don't hear Harlow anymore. I mean, it's a shame. I really, we should have
Fix that, Carl.
No Basil, no Harlow.
Have a Basil
no
and a Harlow.
No Tudor. This guy's name was Tudor Owen. Tudor. And that would be a good name.
Tudor?
Walk around. Hi, my name is Tudor. How you doing?
It depends how you spell it.
And you, if you had a high voice, it would even be better. Hi, my name is Tudor. You know, that'd be even better, right? If you had a deep, it wouldn't work with a deep voice. Hi, my name's Tudor.
It could be a girl.
Tudor.
Yeah.
I think we should have like a movement to have more Harlows, Basil, and Tudors.
Carl?
People should name their kids.
You're single? Maybe
right?
You could handle it.
Yeah, I should. You know what? I'm probably not having any more kids, but we should.
But I heard the probably in there.
Well, I physically can still have kids, but I don't think I'm going to have any more.
All right, we'll see.
Three? I have three.
I know.
One, two, three. It's a lot of kids.
I have four.
I know.
One,
Lisa,
two, three,
you need
four.
A hobby. That's why she got into radio.
Yeah, so I could get away from the kids.
Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, let's talk about the hula hoop, Lisa. Who won that bet?
You did, but luckily we bet nothing.
Yeah, I know. Of course I win.
Let's just be clear.
So hula hoops were invented in 1958. They came out in 1958. They were probably invented a year or so before that. But they hit the market. Whammo was the name of the company.
Yes.
Whammo. And hula hoops came out in 58. So I said 60. Aleph, you said 50-something?
53.
53.
I said 1950.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, I remember hula hoops, and I remember slinkies. Remember those?
Oh, we still have a slinky.
For fun, it's a wonderful toy.
They used to show it going down the stairs in the commercial.
I never would
do that in home.
And a little earlier, I was talking about some, you know, guys trying to pick up the girls, and they had a microphone. Well, it was Mr. Microphone.
And I do remember that.
Quite a few of our listeners reminding us.
Our age is showing.
That it's Mr. Microphone. And we have a young lady who's going to be in front of the microphone here. Jen Bosworth is back at WGN. What's up, Jen? How are you?
Hi,
it's good to see you.
It's great to meet you guys.
Yeah,
I was saying in the green room that I'm a huge fan. Of you guys and
hula hoops or slinkies?
Forget the hula hoop. Forget the Mr. Microphone. Room. You guys and old-timey radio.
Wow, that's cool. You know what? I love when young people are into these classic radio.
You call me young. I love it.
She's like, I'm not young. And then she said the
40,
age.
40. I'm not
okay,
afraid.
40. She said 40, but that's young to me because
I'm a dozen years older than you, my dear. And you guys are doing a great job.
Well,
and I love your show.
Thank you very much.
My husband loves your
show.
We support you so much.
We'll listen to your show,
and I'm sure we'll love it, too.
Well, absolutely. So what's on the show this morning?
So on the show, because of Memorial Day, we have a military officer still in service, and Mike Sanow, and we have a lovely actor from the show Chicago Fire.
Oh, who?
Robin Coffin. She plays Cindy Herman.
Very cool.
Yep.
Hey, Sean. What's going on, buddy? Good to see you, man.
So, yeah, that's what we're doing. Party going on here.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Chicago Fire is a great series.
Great series.
Terrific. I have a bunch of friends on that show.
I bet you do. They've employed a lot of us.
Look, there's been, four new series this year that's been just exploding here
in Chicago. Love it. Yeah, yeah.
So that's good for us.
Christian Stolte. You probably know Christian. He's great. He's terrific on there. And, David Eigenberg's a good pal.
That's who Robin plays his wife.
Yeah, I know. She's great on there.
She's fantastic.
Well, I will be listening, Jen.
Thank you,
guys. Have a terrific show. And after you, then, I believe David Plyer will be here. So you're here till 5 o'clock in the morning?
I am.
Oh, my gosh. Did you have a bunch of coffee?
I did have some.
I see applesauce.
I have kale and mixed with applesauce baby food. Real weird.
There you go.
Anyway,
is it really
pouch.
Baby food?
Yeah, it's meant for babies. It's the only way I get my vegetables.